This is Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk in San Francisco, and I'm here with Chief Warrant Officer Leo Zappawa with a message from the U.S. Coast Guard about ocean safety.
The Coast Guard is just one piece of a greater effort, valued partnerships, and I'd like to take a little bit of time to recognize the hardworking folks the Coast Guard works with every day at the city, county, state levels in California, and of course, our federal partners. And I understand that during these difficult times with regards to COVID, a lot of folks are maintaining their mental wellness through exercise. The majesty and the power of the ocean are oftentimes inviting places to go and see and be socially distant. Unfortunately, with these larger waves we're experiencing along the California coast, it can also be very easy to become complacent and not pay attention to what are commonly known as sneaker waves, or waves of higher magnitude that are infrequent and unexpected at a coastal area. All of us who have enjoyed time near our beautiful area beaches and seashore will see posted signs placed by local officials and when the weather is expected to be adverse. And I would ask your listeners to heed those warnings and take them very seriously. Anytime folks go out in the ocean, we encourage folks to always wear a Coast Guard-approved life jacket. The ones that are orange with retroreflective tape make it a lot easier for folks who are doing the rescuing to locate those people in distress. Unfortunately, we've also had some tragic search and rescue cases occur along the California coast. Most notably were the two search and rescue cases that occurred on the 10th of January at Pescadero Beach State Park and at Point Bonita, and a third that occurred on January 3rd at Blind Beach north of Bodega Bay. In total, five lives were lost in these cases, very tragic. And in all of those cases, those aforementioned sneaker waves overwhelmed the folks on the beach and took them out to sea. And as we all know, anyone who's dipped a toe in the ocean here, it's very cold. It's only about 53 degrees the water temperature, so it's very easy to go into cold water shock and end up drowning, especially in such a turbulent environment. The ocean this time of year almost looks like a washing machine. And although it's very beautiful to view, it's also very dangerous. I want to really convey to your listeners that although the ocean is beautiful on any day when the seas are high, folks should respect how mighty the ocean truly is. Never turn their back on the ocean when enjoying the beach or seashore on foot. If you're going out on the water, either on a surfboard, a sailboat, or powerboat, dress for that cold water environment and wear a life jacket at all times. I always recommend a Type 1, as they're designed to turn most people, even if they're unconscious, face up in the water. Finally, the Coast Guard is always hiring young men and women, and I can think of few organizations with such a rich tapestry of storied histories. 230 years of service to our nation. And we in the Coast Guard truly live the service motto of Semper Paratus, or always ready. I joined in 1996 and planned on only doing 4 years, and now in the blink of an eye, it's been 25.
All right, thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. 9:40 on Tuesday, we like to check in with SalesportTalk.com and talk a little bit about sailing. And as always, co-hosting this segment from SalesportTalk.com is Karen Lyle. Karen, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Rick. I'm so glad to hear your voice.
Oh, well, thank you for that. Let's get to our guest. It is Eric Jones. Eric Jones is well known for helping people on the water, to say the least, the recipient of the Medal of Valor from the Department of Defense for rescuing five people on 9/11, also the founder of Sea Valor, a sailing program for people dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. Eric, welcome to the show. If you could, please, just tell our listeners about what happened and what you did on 9/11, please.
Yeah, good morning. I appreciate you having me on the show. Can't believe it's been almost 20 years. It seems like it was just yesterday. Basically, what happened was I was in graduate school at the time at George Washington University, and I had been a volunteer paramedic and volunteer firefighter for about 6 years prior to that. So I had a certain amount of training and experience, and I was driving to class that morning when the plane crashed into the building. And I knew that there were going to be people that needed medical assistance and help. So I pulled over and parked and ran towards the building and just kind of started carrying people out, carrying them, dragging them for as long as I could until it became too hot and unsafe to go back in.
Did you have any long-term ramifications about the inhalation of the material there, or how did you get through it all?
You know, part of it was just being young and really healthy. I was 24 at the time, so I was in pretty good shape physically. I have had health implications, like a lot of other people, with my lungs and certain other issues from that. But the bigger issue for me was post-traumatic stress. I saw things that I won't even talk about, but you can imagine just what a horrific scene it was. And seeing people die and hearing them die and not being able to help them is something that's really stuck with me and haunted me for 20 years now, to the point that I still have nightmares about it.
Wow.
You know, Eric, you have really found solace in the sea and in sailing, and have actually turned that experience, the hardship of that experience, you know, the aftermath of that experience with the PTSD, into a really great program with your SeaValor.org. And I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, I'd love to. You know, for me, it was born out of necessity in that I'd struggled with PTSD and insomnia and depression for years since 9/11. And I tried all the traditional therapies and antidepressants, and I'm not knocking them. I mean, they work great for a lot of people. But for me, I think I had sort of plateaued in that I was still just feeling, you know, really down, and certain things would trigger it. I've had several friends that have killed themselves from PTSD. And so for me, it was a matter of what works, what makes me feel better. And 10 or 15 years, I guess it was about 12 years ago, I went on my first big sailing trip. It was with a friend who was bringing his boat up from the Virgin Islands or somewhere in the Caribbean to Annapolis. And so I went with him, and it was 4 or 5 days out in the Gulf. And for that period of time, I just felt calm and peaceful and at ease, and I wasn't having nightmares. And I was part of the crew, and I was, you know, part of a team and focused on a very specific goal. And so for those 4 or 5 days that we were sailing up, that was the best I'd felt since 9/11. And so sort of the light bulb went off above my head where I said, hey, if this worked, and being on the water and learning this new skill set can make me focus on something positive instead of what I've been focused on, which is just sort of the negative aspects and the lingering memories from 9/11, then I want to pursue that more. And so I learned to sail and started in small little boats. And that's sort of what got me into it. And I came back to California. I'm from the Bay Area. I came out here a few years ago when my mom passed away. And I started sailing with a friend out of San Francisco. And I found that on the Saturdays that we would sail, my entire mood just improved. I'd feel better the entire day. And then what happened was I started to feel better on Fridays because I would look forward to Saturdays. And then I started to feel better on Sundays because I'd still have the high and the euphoria from our trips on Saturday. So what I discovered was that just by sailing for 3 or 4 hours on a Saturday, I could really buy myself 3 good days where I had something positive to focus on. And so, again, after my last friend killed himself in Berkeley a few years ago, that was sort of the final straw for me where I decided that something needed to be done. And the guy that killed himself was named Andrew Brands, and he's somebody that I worked with in Haiti, who was an Oscar-winning filmmaker. And he won an Oscar and then shot himself 2 or 3 weeks later. And so for that incident really hit hard for me because he was basically my same age and we had a lot of similar experiences. So after that, I just decided that something really needed to be done to try to keep this from happening to other people. But also the fear was that, you know, I might end up like him if I didn't do something positive.
Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle with Eric Jones here on Sports Byline. You know, Eric, you know, men, a lot of times we're expected to just get on with it. We're not expected to, you know, deal with things like mental health. We're just supposed to just, you know, grin and bear it and whatever. And yet in the last decade, I would say mental health has come to the fore. It doesn't make you, quote unquote, wimpy to admit that you've had these things. I mean, I've had people in the military come on and talk about PTSD. And I had one Navy SEAL saying, yeah, I decided I wasn't going to come home with that. I mean, it's just, it's not something that you can choose, and it is important to talk about it. And I know that's hard for men sometimes because we're supposed to be macho. It's important, though, isn't it?
It, you know, I couldn't have said it better myself, and you absolutely hit the nail on the head. And for me, that's exactly what my issue was, is that I was young, I come from a military family, I was a firefighter, and so within all those communities, there is sort of a I don't know if it's machoism or what it is, but just you're supposed to be tough, and admitting that you're depressed or that you're having nightmares because you've seen or experienced certain things, it unfortunately, I think, is interpreted as a sign of weakness. And so that's really something that I'm helping or wanting and hoping to change within the culture, whether it's law enforcement communities, military communities, fire department, first responder, healthcare worker communities, that admitting that what you've seen or what you've experienced is affecting you and maybe making you depressed or having other issues, it doesn't make you weak, it makes you human. And, you know, seeing dead babies or friends killed in car accidents or, you know, there's so many other things that can cause PTSD, and sweeping these under the rug and just pretending that they're not an issue and hoping that things will get better, it certainly didn't work for me. And I tried for years that exact approach, just that time will heal it, it'll get better. And it didn't, you know. And so I found that the only thing that really helped is taking this negative experience and turning it into something positive, because nothing's going to bring back the people that I saw die on 9/11 or any of the other things I've seen over the years. Nothing can change that now, but what can happen potentially is we can turn that negative experience into something that maybe saves other people, or at the very least helps other people between now and sometime in the future. So that's what I'm hoping to do. And I found that sailing and doing things out in the ocean and water is a good step. And it's certainly a tool. It's not a cure-all, but it can be one tool in people's toolkit that they can use to help improve their mental health.
Well, and Eric, you know, on our show, we were covering the sneaker waves and the five people who died from waves that came up on the shore and took them out to sea. And there was a little boy who was swept out to sea, and he died, but his body was missing. And you used your skills and connections to help search for his body. Can you tell us about not only what you did, but, you know, how that helped the family who lost their children?
Sure. His name is RNA. He's 12 and a half years old, and it's just a really heartbreaking story. I had dinner with the parents a few weeks ago, and they finally told me in full detail what happened. And basically, during COVID, everybody's cooped up. The kids are playing video games, and so they're wanting to be good, responsible parents. So they took their kids to the beach so they could get out in nature, and it was a beautiful day, sunny, warm, and they went to the beach and didn't think anything of it. And the signs there said, no swimming, you know, rip currents, no swimming. So they said, okay, well, we're not going to let our kids swim. It's cold anyway. But they never realized what sneaker waves were. They had no idea. And the two kids were playing. They weren't in the water. They were 5 or so feet from the surf. And one of these sneaker waves came in, and it took the 8-year-old out, just swept him off his feet and pulled him out. And then the dad ran over and sort of waded in trying to get to his son. And then another wave came and took the dad out. And then the mom, same thing. She got carried out. And so the really heartbreaking part about it is RNA, the 12-year-old, saw his brother and his mom and dad sort of floating or being carried out to sea. And so he ran and went in the water trying to save his brother and his parents. And people on the beach were able to get the 8-year-old and the mom and dad back, but somebody was holding RNA, and I guess another wave came in and dislocated the man's shoulder, and he lost grip of RNA, and RNA drifted. For about 15 minutes, they just watched as he drifted slowly away from them until eventually he couldn't tread water anymore and went under. And so, you know, it's really heartbreaking. And to answer your question, I was involved because the Coast Guard called off their search after, it was basically a few hours. They called off the search because I think they realized that chances of survival were pretty slim. And so the family reached out through a family friend that actually teaches yoga. She volunteers her time and teaches yoga with Steve Aller, and said, hey, you know, Steve Aller has a lot of connections. Can you help us try to locate him and, you know, continue the search? And so that's how we became involved. And it ended up being a month. They raised some money with GoFundMe, and they used that money to pay for helicopters. And we did it on an all-volunteer basis. We didn't charge anything for our time, but certainly the helicopters, renting those was expensive, and the boats and fuel and everything like that. But we didn't find him, unfortunately, but it did bring the family a lot of peace, knowing that everything that was humanly done could have been done, and now they can move on with their lives as best they can, knowing that they literally did not leave any stone unturned. We scoured every stretch of the beach from Big Sur all the way up to Bodega Bay numerous times with helicopters and jet skis and boats. And so, you know, unfortunately, they have to acknowledge that he's gone and he's never going to come back, and they're not going to be able to say goodbye to his body. But again, they've wanted to do something that can help prevent this tragedy from happening to other people. Because like you said, I think it's actually more than five now. During the month that we were flying in the helicopter looking for Arne, three other people drowned. There was a father who jumped in trying to save his kid, and he saved his son, but then he drowned. So we were actually looking for his body for a day or two. And then another woman was, she was searching for sea urchins in the tide pools, and a wave took her and her boyfriend off, and the boyfriend was able to swim back, but she drowned, and her body washed up on one of the beaches. And then there was somebody else up in the Pacific. So, I mean, it's terrifying that in just a month that I know of, there are at least four people that drowned because of these sneaker waves.
Well, it's just terrible, tragic stories, but important work being done by Eric Jones. Make sure to go online to his website, seavalor.org, seavalor.org. Eric, thanks for all the work that you do. Thanks for coming on the show, and hopefully we'll catch up in the future.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you so much for having me.